This is part two of a two-part podcast.
Hey, this is T. Blankenship. Have you seen the new video of Wheaton Labs? It is permaculture awesomeness with all new and improved things like more rocket mass heaters, easy bake coffin, Willy Wonka, rocket cooktop 2.0, and the truly passive greenhouse. To see more, go to permies.com/tour. Again, that is permies.com/tour.
Okay, I know I keep going off on a tangent, but let me roll back to the Portland gardening community. And I think I talked about Bob and all of the gardeners there that aren't gardening. And now I want to talk about the gal that is the owner. Mm-hmm. And as much as I feel like there's so many stories down that road about her and what she's doing there that are amazing and cool, the bottom line is that I believe that there is a level of sad that is that she has. She didn't say anything to me. This is me drinking subtext, and so I'm probably wrong. Maybe it's just all fiction in my head. And so, I think that what I'm getting out of it is that she wants to be gardening with gardeners every day. She mm-hmm. wants to be harvesting with gardeners, and she wants to be enjoying the bounty of the garden with gardeners. And instead, she's doing it all by herself. She's all alone in a way. She's not alone, but she's alone.
Yeah.
And so I want her to be part of the Gardening Gardeners program. I want her to come join the permaculture boot camp. I think it would be really, really, really good for her as well as good for the boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
And then she would finally have what she seeks. And so, you know, throughout the week, going out and gardening. And then I know that after observing this stuff in Portland, I changed some of the stuff about how the boot camp runs, and it's been delightful.
Uh-huh.
In the past, I said any time that we harvest food and we preserve it for future boots, then that's on boot time. And because most of the boots, once you get to 5 o'clock, it's their own time, and mm-hmm. they usually, right. you know, put their feet up and do fun things. And Saturday, this place turns into something like a ghost town.
Yeah.
Most of the time. But I would say there's one person out of five who comes here, and on the evenings and weekends, they're still at it. They may have shifted to a project that where they're going to get, you know, it's a skip thing, or maybe they got their own project, or maybe there's some project we were working on, but they just wanted to keep going.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one person out of five. But most of them, it's like at the end of the day, they're just done. But all right. So there's boot time and there's personal time. So during boot time, we're going to be gardening and stuff like that. And in the past, it's like, okay, if we're going to bring in food and, you know, if it's going to be something where we're going to do a food preservation project that will feed boots 3 months into the future, then that's on boot time. We'll do it together as a group collectively. But if you're going to just feed yourself, then all of that happens on your personal time. So now we've made a slight change. And it's like, if a meal is going to be prepared using like 95% or more materials from the garden,
uh-huh.
that can be prepared during boot time.
Oh.
And so now there's been a lot more of that happening.
Oh, nice.
And so, whereas before, people, because we provide unlimited organic food.
Right.
And so, as an example, people here will eat the corn chips, the organic corn chips and organic salsa. Mm. And so it's like, corn chips and salsa, I'll have some, thank you. And at lunch, it's almost tradition to have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches made with bread that is, you know, it's all organic, but it came from the store.
Right. Okay.
Once in a long while, somebody will make bread, like usually polydough or sourdough.
Yeah.
And then they might make their peanut butter and jelly sandwiches from that.
Yeah. But,
okay. All that said, now the thing I'm pushing for is like, you know, during the boot day, get a soup together or get a, or start roasting a bunch of veggies or, you know, basically make a big bunch of food or a meal or get something going in a crock pot or an Instapot or, mm-hmm. or in the oven, get stuff going. And you can do all of that during boot time. And so people are enjoying that. So more of the cooking as a group, but it has to be from the garden as opposed to like, oh, I'm just going to go inside now and eat corn chips.
Right.
And it's like, or have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It's like, no. That's on your personal time. If it's coming from the store, it's on your personal time. But if it's coming from the garden, cooking is okay, but eating is on your personal time.
Well, that's nice. Because in the past, you know, I would try to prep something over the lunch hour or get something going after 5, you know, but a lot of times it takes a little more time. So that's neat that you can do a little bit of food prep during the boot day. I think that's great.
That's been one little change. It's not much of a change. It's a pretty tiny change. One change that we've done since my Portland trip where I've observed all this. So yeah, I would like it if the gal that was the owner of all of that or the manager or whatever her role is, to ditch that and come here or, you know, someday be part of some Gardening Gardeners program that's going on somewhere. And so, I kind of feel like, because then you would be doing it, you'd be gardening throughout the day, every day, with a whole bunch of other people, and then you know, bringing in the harvest and actually some of the food prep would all be happening in a group. Mm-hmm. And there have been a lot of times where on personal time, people are cooking together and harvesting together and stuff like that. But it also kind of seems like, and the one thing I was trying to explain to somebody, they were asking me about these kinds of things. And I was trying to say to them something about like, I don't want to like stop buying the corn chips, the tortilla chips. I don't want to be like, I'm going to not buy those anymore. What I want is I want to provide something that's so good that we end up with that bag of tortilla chips getting stale.
Yeah.
And nobody wants them. Because everything else is so much better. It's so good. And so.
Exactly.
So anyway, I kind of feel like this owner person, if she were to be part of the boot camp or a Gardening Gardeners program, that it would be 20 times better than the life path that she's on now. That it would be more fulfilling and more enjoyable and better.
I think you've created a really wonderful educational program here. I know that every time I visit you, I take things home and change the way I do it at home because you've created a really powerful structure. You know, you make a lot of things possible just because of the way you've designed the place and the way you've designed the day and everybody having, you know, not exactly having roles, but the way people work together makes things easier. And so I take things home all the time, ways that I can run my homestead better. So I think anybody who's running a farm or running a homestead or even just their own garden and family would benefit from coming here and spending some time with you and seeing how you run this place to see what they can pick up and adjust their own situation. Because you have things so organized here that you get to do a lot more. Just because you're organized, just because you're clean all the time, your tools are always put away and every little thing makes it so you can get more done. Because if it just takes a minute to just get the stuff out, make the stuff and clean everything, it's quicker than if you have to find something or tidy up first. It just makes it more efficient, which means we get to do more stuff. So I think anybody could learn a lot just from being with you for a couple of weeks.
You know, One of the things before we started recording this podcast, I was saying, like, I don't have any notes. Normally I have notes, but I tried to make a few notes, and you said something about how we should compare to the WOOF program.
Oh, I was just curious how your imagination of the gardener, the gardening gardeners program, how it's similar or maybe how it's different from the WOOF program, which is an existing program. And I think it works for a lot of people, but it doesn't necessarily give everybody exactly what they're looking for.
So WOOF is Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms.
Yes.
And so what'll happen, you sign up and then you go to a farm and you help on the farm and you get a place to pitch a tent and you get food.
Mm-hmm.
And, then after a while, it's the seasons change and the farmer is like, thanks for your help. And now we're done for the year. And it's like, so I would have to say that, I mean, there's so many different places on WOOF that you can go to and so many different programs. But I got to say that, I have met 100, but probably not quite 100 different people who used to be on WOOF and they're not on WOOF anymore. And they were the host, the WOOF host. And the biggest complaint is that when I did WOOF, I got less done in a day and I got a whole lot of drama I didn't want.
That's a hazard. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It sounds nice to have help, but a lot of times for me, it's easier to just be in my own head because I know what I want. I don't have to explain it to myself, and I don't have to convince myself of the thing. I do a thing, and I might make a mistake, but if I have to spend a lot of time talking somebody into why I'm doing it, I get tired of that.
I've in this podcast in the past, I remember visiting with Helen Attow and with Joseph Lofthouse, and they both had a thing that they said, and that it's amazing that their numbers were the same, were identical, that I thought was really important. It went something like this. In general, if somebody offers to help, I say no, thank you, because at the end of the day, I'll get more done by myself than with their so-called help. But there's one person out of 20 that is the exception to the rule. I actually get more done with their help than if I was doing it by myself. And what a delight.
Yeah.
Now, I do want to say that there was a point in time when Helen was saying that she was taking no interns, and it had a lot to do with this whole thing of, like, I don't need to be held back. However, two of the people here asked to be our intern, and she said okay to one of them, even though she wasn't taking interns. And so apparently, and the particular guy that she chose, I thought was a great guy. He did a lot of stuff, and he was doing the boot camp full time, and in the evenings and weekends, he was doing his own projects on one of the plots. So when a boot is here,
we
give them their own acre to go play on.
That is such a nice thing.
So this guy, he took his acre and he was doing a whole bunch of stuff on his acre, and he was posting pictures about it and stuff like that.
And so, he did that in the afternoons after boot camp time and on the weekends?
Yeah, evenings and weekends.
How nice.
And so, and then he wanted to be Helen's intern, and then Helen said, okay.
Yeah.
You know, because he had proven himself here.
Exactly. That's beautiful.
And so, I kind of feel like, you know, there are opportunities like that that come up from time to time. And I kind of feel like and that's the other thing I was thinking is like, let's say, Helen or Joseph, they go through 100 interns and in the end they say that there are 5 that they want to keep and there's 95 I want those 95 to come to the permaculture boot camp. or a gardening gardeners program, because I think that we can work with them to the point that they could be an intern there.
Yes.
Like I like the idea that we're getting those people to go from wherever they were to being, because I think that a lot of what stops a lot of people is going to be like, I don't know what I'm doing, so I'm not going to touch it. And I got to say, like 19 out of 20 people that come and join the boot camp, the first week, it is exactly like that, that we get, we kind of consider the first week to be a wash, but there's one out of 20 where it's like, oh no, they got a lot done. They are amazing, you know? And so, but I do think that most of the people that come to the permaculture boot camp, the first week is going to be like, our expectations are super low. And, but I also kind of feel like, boy, there's been a lot of people that have gotten to like the 6 month mark here where it's like, they've gone from being having never touched a hammer, never touched a shovel, never touched a drill. And in the first week was quite the wash. So after 6 months, it's like they are a champion. They are amazing. And so they're really getting it done. And it had to do with the fact that it's like they're so overwhelmed by what they don't yet know or what they have been able to do that they don't know where to start. They don't know. And it's like, I love the idea. I love having those people in the boot camp where they start off with so very little, and then after a few months, they are turning into a superstar. They are really doing great at all of this stuff.
And you created a really safe place for folks to learn. Folks who have barely held a hammer or don't really know how to use tools, you've got good tools, and you've got people who know how to use them and are patient and kind. And we'll teach somebody how to use a chainsaw and cut down their first tree, or how to use a nail gun and stuff that might be kind of scary to somebody who's certainly not going to do it by themselves on their own somewhere. But, you know, I mean, I came here and learned from some of the guys here one summer because I wanted to learn how to use a chainsaw, and I didn't want to ask, you know, some neighbor or whatever. I felt like coming here would be a good place to learn. And so that's one of the things I focused on one summer, was learn how to cut a tree down. And I really appreciate that you provide those skills. You provide a place for people to learn in a safe place, regardless of where they start. And you've built some pretty fantastic people here. I mean, I know some of the guys and gals that showed up pretty timid and didn't really know what they were doing, but they had a heart for it. And they became quite proficient at building stuff and building the world around them. I think it's really impressive what you're doing.
I like the idea that we're guiding people from the very beginning into being a great. And I think that's one of the differences between a gardening gardeners program and the WOOF program. Mm-hmm. And that is that I kind of feel like the gardening gardeners program is more perennial.
Uh-huh.
It's much longer term. And I don't mean that it's like you have to obligate yourself to the longer term, but that there will be a lot of people in it that are there for a much longer haul. Yeah. And so when you get there, even if you're going to be there for only a week, I like the idea that most of the people there have been there for more than 6 months. And so it won't always be the case, but I like the idea of that. And that's the general design of it. And so, I kind of feel like there's a bunch of different differences to WOOF. So I think, another one is that, with the gardening gardeners program, I like the idea that a homesteader, which it's more for homesteaders, whereas WOOF is for farmers.
Yeah.
And we might want to talk about what's the difference between a homestead and a farm at some point. But I think that a homesteader is going to be more perennial. It's going to be more like we're doing this all year. And at the same time, I kind of feel like WOOF is now I think it's like the default is 25 hours a week, I think is the default.
Uh-huh.
And it's less, I'll say it's less formal, whereas the boot camp is 40 hours a week. And so I, and on top of that, I think that the boot camp has probably more discipline to it. I mean, it isn't uh-huh. like sweaty and hard and you're going to get exhausted kind of discipline, but it's more like we start at the same time every day and here's our daily yeah. schedule. And we have a fixed schedule throughout the week that we meet and we do. And,
yeah. And we show up for each other. You know that everybody's going to be there at 8 o'clock, you know, and you can count on that. And they'll be there till 5.
Right. You can count on each other yeah. and it's very predictable, very regular. And I suppose that there's probably some WOOF programs that'll be like that. But, I would say that, and of course we're doing things in a more polyculture fashion. Organic farms are probably going to be more row cropping, more tractors, more pulling weeds, more monocrops.
You know, if you have time later, I'd love to show you the polyculture that I'm looking at here. The plants are absolutely magnificent, each one in their individuality, way more than they would be in a field of that particular plant. It's also a hygge culture, but it's like as I'm sitting here, I'm looking at, they're so bright and vibrant. Like you don't get that in a field of lots of squash or in a flat garden.
So.
Yeah, there's a picture.
That is a very old picture. That's a long time ago.
Like springtime stuff is starting to come out, and now the stuff is, you'd be waist deep or taller. The sunchokes are, I don't know, are they 15 almost feet tall? It's ridiculous.
And looking at that picture, I think that what you're looking at now compared to that picture, you're looking at 15 times more biomass that you
can see. Oh, yeah, at least. Wait, yeah. I can't see any soil from here. I can see a little bit of mulch, zero soil.
And all the potatoes, I don't think we've planted potatoes there for 7 years. And yet there's giant potatoes everywhere. But the potatoes are now being overwhelmed by the squash plants. Although I think just from memory, from where you're sitting and what you're looking at, there's that giant asparagus. And
that's what it is. And it's the healthiest, most magnificent asparagus I've ever seen. And it was like that when it was a stalk, too. I mean, it's like it's huge. And now the leaves are, I want to take my laptop over there. It's actually so hard to interrupt. You keep talking.
Can you do that? Oh, there you go. You're going to do it.
I can do anything.
Look at this. So, Andreas, you've got like blur the background going on. So we see all this blurry stuff.
Oh, man. I don't know how to do that.
Okay.
Oh, gosh. Okay, maybe I can't do it. Well, anyway, you can imagine. It's the coolest thing. Sorry to interrupt everybody.
My background isn't blurred.
I know. I don't know how I did that.
Oh, look. So Andreas found one of the
pictures. There we go.
I think that's a still from an image. I think that was like early August. So that's like a month and a half ago.
Beautiful.
I think Samantha took that video of when I was up there. I don't know. I kind of got on this kick to go out once a day for 5 minutes to pluck little grasses. And just from where you're sitting, there's from memory, there's potatoes, there's a big rhubarb, there's the asparagus, there's sunchokes, there's mint. We're using the mint as chop and drop, which always smells great when you chop and drop.
There's lots of daikon out there.
Yes.
The radishes. There's radishes that are making little radish pods that are super yummy. There is what I think is a sorrel plant. And I've never seen one of that size and dimension. I mean, I think it's probably 3 feet long in the leaf.
Kale, I think.
Yeah, kale's out there. Kale. Sun chokes like crazy. Corn is still happening on the hilltop. Onions, walking onions everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Such a group, you know, and everybody's healthy. And you see that sometimes in permaculture gardens. You'll just see some individual plants that are so magnificent. And I feel like it really happens when you do polyculture. I know a lot of people do everything all the same and together because it's easy. But the individual plant has a higher level of health and vibration, it seems to me, when you give it the polyculture environment. And if the plant is healthier, I think there's more minerals and more nutrient in the food. So I think the food itself has more value for us to eat.
I think a very powerful plant food is the root exudate of other species of plant.
Yeah.
And so that can only happen in a polyculture. And so you end up with a more nutritious food. And you were saying something earlier about, gardening gives you better nutrition. And I do. And it's like through health adventures of the last few years, I strongly agree with that. And at the same time, what I have learned is that 99% of people want convenience 100 times more than nutrition.
Well, I think it depends on where you're at. You know, I mean, if you're perfectly healthy and you feel great and you can eat at the grocery store without complaint, then, you know, maybe your time is worth more and you don't want to spend it in the soil. But folks who have health challenges, or their children are growing up, or whatever is going on for them personally, that high quality nutrition becomes a real value. Then I think that growing it yourself, or getting farmers market food, or getting in with a neighbor and sharing the growing, I think it's the only way to get that high quality nutrient. Because when we purchase things at a store, we're competing. They are competing on price. And if you're growing it yourself,
that's growing in a polyculture is going to be of a much higher quality than the best food that you can buy that is labeled organic at Whole Foods.
Oh, absolutely. Well, even if you just, like, if you go out and you grow a beet in your garden, right? And it's got that black soil that is all over the beet when you pull it up. If you go buy a beet from the organic farm, it's not the tilthy soil. It's going to be a heavier, more clay type, or more, there's not going to be that organic material in the soil the way there would be in your own garden. So it doesn't have that level of health. Even though they're growing it organically, they can't be putting that much input. I mean, how much nutrient do you put down in your own yard? You can't compete, really. You can't compete on quality unless you do it yourself.
So when we talk about the gardeners in that Portland community that are not gardening, I think that they may or may not be aware of all of these things, and yet they're eating at restaurants and grocery stores instead of out of the garden. And what I'm saying is that I'm trying to shoot for their soul more than their health.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm going more for their mental health. This sensation of a life of beautiful substance rather than the gray existence of being a cog in the machine.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to say that if you come to a community of like-minded people and do it, and I think that's a big point I'm kind of trying to nail down, which I'm struggling with, is it's like, especially when trying to compare gardening gardeners to Woof, is it's like, I think that the Gardening Gardeners program is more soul building than Woof. I mean, Woof, I think, really works for a lot of people, but I think it also turns into a poison for a lot of people too. And so it's like, I like the Gardening Gardeners program more for people, for their own personal health growth. I mean, part of it is that the whole mentality of a farm versus a garden. If you're focusing on a farm, instead of a garden or a homestead. With a farm, the focus is going to be on how do I rape the earth sufficiently so that way I can profit the most. I mean, when I talk to farmers, it's like I need to produce a crop that has certain characteristics so that I can sell it. I'm trying to do a factory thing to feed the factory consumers. And so I'm going to make choices in order to be able to maximize my profit. Whereas with gardening gardeners or with a homestead or a garden, the idea is like, I'm going to eat it.
Yeah, it's really a different mindset. I mean, to be able to turn a profit is a skill. And I certainly don't turn a profit on my homestead. But what I am able to do is provide the food that my family is going to eat. And that doesn't bring money in. It does mean we spend less money, maybe. I mean, I don't know that it's cheaper. It costs a fair amount of my time. But I know that the quality that I'm putting into my family is higher than what I would be able to purchase. Even if I was super rich and bought the best food in the whole world, which I have done for years, I can still grow better food. The first time I grew my own tomatoes and grew my own onions, my first year of growing onions, they were so dense, like so hard and heavy. Like I'd never experienced an onion like that before. And if I forget a few and leave them out in the garden, they live all winter long. I mean, I didn't know onions could do that. So the food we grow, if it's that much healthier, aren't we going to be healthier when we eat it?
I think so. I think that if you have if you're growing food in a much richer soil, and a lot of the food that you're getting that's organic isn't even growing in soil. Like,
that's another thing. I mean, who wants to eat lettuce that grew in styrofoam, in plastic tubs? I mean, they say it's organic, but that's not, I mean, I don't eat plastic.
Yeah, so there's like a lot of those growing in hydroponics, generally, like a lot of hydroponics, a lot of greenhouse stuff.
How many of those farms are buying food-grade hoses, right? I mean, I spend like 3 times the price to buy the absolute best water-safe drinking hose to water the garden. Does the organic farm do that? I don't know. Not the organic farm I lived on, they didn't. They bought the best hose they could buy, not the best drinking water hose.
Hi, this is Mark. There are a lot of reasons to get angry these days, but I prefer to focus on the positive things that we each can do to make this world a better place. The book Building a Better World in Your Backyard, Instead of Being Angry at Bad Guys, is a great resource for just that. Instead of throwing my arms up in frustration at governments or big corporations, there's a list of ideas that we each can tackle to affect change. Information about this book and other resources can be found at permies.com.
So I kind of feel like so when it comes to nutrition, yes, I think a good rich soil, polyculture, and on top of that, there's a lot of shortcuts that are being taken to get that food to Whole Foods that is still labeled organic. And I kind of feel like there's a lot of sleaze wrapped up in that package. But
there's
another story for another day.
That'll be another podcast. I'd love to talk about that.
Yeah, I think we've kind of touched on this podcast a few times before.
There was a thing you said earlier about, you know, folks wanting to be gardeners, but then they end up sitting around a lot. And I feel like something that you make available here is you have something you call the Supper Program, which is really renting a cabin. And some of your cabins are on an acre of land, and they're surrounded by gardens that are overflowing with food, and they're super private and beautiful. And then when folks are renting, they can jump into the boot camp for a day or half a day, kind of as they choose, as, you know, they have to make an arrangement to do it. We have to be able to count on them. But you give people that opportunity to make that adjustment. Because if somebody's coming out of an office job or an apartment living, they're probably going to want to lay around and watch the clouds go by. Maybe for a while. Take some healing. But then as they're ready, the structure is there, ready to catch them. So you don't just go into oblivion forever. You could just take a break, breathe for maybe a month or maybe a week, whatever it takes. And I know that was really important for me when I moved out of the city. Like, I didn't do anything for a while, and I felt bad. But then I realized, like, I need to take some time to take care of me, and then I could go out and be super productive. So I think that's really cool what you offer here, is you let people, like, yeah, just rent a cabin, enjoy, eat out of the garden, and when you're ready, come and play with us. I think that's really neat.
I think that, to wrap up, like, the story of Bob, who is a gardener who doesn't garden, I just kind of feel like I want Bob to come here. I want Bob to join a garden. I want to eventually get to the point that we have such powerful success with the Permaculture Bootcamp that I can finally write that book, Gardening Gardeners, and then there will be 100,000 places doing the Gardening Gardeners program. And then Bob can go to any one of those, whichever one is the best fit for him. And but I do kind of feel like there's a lot of people where they are they are on a soul-draining path, and it's just gray and sad, and they're making the best of it. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're spending a lot of time seeing a shrink, and they're doing a lot of stuff to try to mitigate sadness. And I kind of wonder if they were to come here, for example, for the boot camp, then it might get them out of it. Because then for 40 hours a week, they are gardening and natural building and homesteading and all of the stuff. And none of the pears are going to waste. And all of the pears. And so then I also wanted to say that for the owner. Yes, come out here and the pears aren't going to waste. And I think that she felt bad because she already had canned pears and dried pears. And so what's the point of canning or drying more? And she can't get people to eat them fresh. She can't get people to eat her canned stuff or her dried stuff. And so it's like, come out here. And now it's all getting et. And on top of that, whenever you go to do this thing that you love to do, you're doing it with other people who also love to do this thing. And I kind of feel like if you leave people on their own, then they tend to not. And it's like, I don't know if this is, we're probably getting into some sort of psychological element that I don't understand. But I would have to say that it's been my impression that most people, would left to their own devices, it kind of becomes a vacation for them, and a vacation where they're waiting for their servants to bring them their drinks. And so they, not only do they not garden, but I don't know, they haven't, maybe, I think a big part of it is they haven't developed the habits, and if they move, their habits change. And then, as was pointed out earlier, some people move to a place that has no garden.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, I kind of want to help the people in apartments with no gardens to join a Gardening Gardeners program.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so for Bob, for the owner to come here and the dream happens and it moves forward. And then I was talking earlier about homesteaders all across the United States and why would they even want to do it? And it's because I think that they're doing it all by themselves right now. And they wish to have community. They have like 200 acres, and they're doing it solo, purely solo. And it is sad, and it's a bummer, and it's a drag. But on the other hand, what they don't want is to have a dozen hippies move in and then, you know, basically treat the owner as their personal servant. And I kind of see, I've heard stories of that sort of thing happening with woof stuff, which is why a lot of farms no longer offer woof. They're just tired of, I mean, granted, with woof, I've heard some great stories of some wonderful woofers coming and doing wonderful things. But I've also heard other stories. And I think we've got a few podcasts kind of sharing some of those other stories. And it's like, all right, so that totally happens. But I kind of feel like with a Gardening Gardeners program, the whole thing is different. When people come to the boot camp, they're growing food for themselves and future boots. And they're eating the food of past boots.
Yes.
They're building their own shelter, and they're living in shelter that was built by the boots of before. And
they have the inspiration to see that that's possible. You know, if you bring somebody in here and they've never done gardening and they've never done any tools, but they look around and they see things that were built by people just like them who came in at the same level they are and who over a couple years or a few seasons learned how to garden. And now you're eating the food that somebody else grew when they started out in the same place. I think it's really inspiring. You've got these beautiful cabins that each one is a work of art. And they were made by people who were learning how to make these round wood timber framed artistic structures. When you can see the picture of Allerton Abbey is the center picture right now. I mean, they're just doing the finishing, the whitewash on that, but the floor is made of cob. There's all this beautiful art done into the walls. I mean, it's a treasure. And to know that somebody who put that floor in, the person who put that floor in, it was their first cob floor. I mean, it's such an inspiration, I think.
So, all right, let's see. Two or three more stories I want to try to get through in this podcast.
Awesome.
And so one of the stories is that I went to a farm and I saw a lot of fruit trees, heavy with fruit, that was landing on the ground as I was there.
Mm.
He had pigs, and so he was going around gathering the fruit up and giving it to the pigs, but he was also about to leave on a trip. And he's like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to be. And it's like he can't give it away. He can't. And it's like it just sounded like one struggle after another of trying to be able to get it all to work. And it did seem like a lot of the fruit was going bad on the ground. And a lot of the fruit was just going to drop.
Yeah.
And not get et. And I was feeling like he was feeling bummed about that.
Yeah.
And what I wanted for him, because he had something like 40 acres or something. But only like an acre was in fruit trees. I don't know. I wished for him to be able to have a Gardening Gardeners program because let's say he's got a dozen people there that are all putting in 40 hours a week, then every week everything moves forward a bit. And then on top of that, when all of this fruit is ready to drop, then this mob of 12 people goes over there, gets it all, puts up a lot of it, and a lot of it ends up in meals over the next several days.
Yeah.
And so it's not wasted. And rather than him fretting about going on a trip, it's like there's nothing to fret. This group, it puts in 40 hours a week every week. And yeah. Half of the group has been here for almost a year. And so it's like they know how everything is done and how to do everything. It'll be fine while I'm away.
Mm-hmm.
Everything will be great. So I just kind of felt like a recurring theme is I saw a lot of pear trees with fruit on the ground turning yucky, and the gardener who has reached the ultimate gardening thing, a pear tree producing a lot of beautiful pears.
Yeah.
Is sad. And I kind of feel like this is kind of shocking. This is a weird, weird, weird thing. And I feel like the Gardening Gardeners program is the solution. All right. Now I want to talk about, and this is the reason why you're here today.
Oh.
Is you introduced me to a guy with a beautiful garden, and he's got a very Elsiard Bouvier kind of thing going on.
He does.
Everything on his property clearly has been loved. This guy meticulously cares for everything. So one of my favorite parts from the Man Who Planted Trees movie, which is only 30 minutes long, I don't know what else to call it, but a movie, is the part where the storyteller meets Elzéar Bouvier and says something about his home is obviously extremely well cared for. Mm-hmm. Every rock has been placed correctly. And then all of his buttons have been darned with a meticulous care, so you cannot see the man.
You can't even see the patches on his clothes. I love that.
So, and everything he does is careful and meticulous. And so I kind of feel like this guy you introduced me to is like that.
For sure.
And as much as he's producing enough food to probably fill three bellies around. You think he could feed 20? Well, he could feed 20 families through the summer, maybe, when all the food's coming on.
Well, I mean, I take mad quantities of his food and store it all year. I mean, we store the root vegetables, we pickle everything. And he's, at the same time as producing massive quantities of food all summer, he also is starting seeds. So he starts baby trees. He's working on a whole forest of persimmons that he's got going from his persimmon tree. You know, he starts a seed and he gets them down in, he's got a creek that flows near his property, it's on his property, but near his garden, near his house. And he just goes up and down the creek and just plants apples and plums and pears. And he's filling the creek valley with food. And he's not going to eat it. It's just like for the deer and because he loves it. We also get a lot of fire. So there's areas of their property that's burned. And so he's restoring that as well. But yeah, he's able to do it all. Amazing.
So his garden is, I mean, he has a style of gardening that is different than mine.
Mm-hmm.
And he is producing a lot of food, which, talking about how he gardens is a fun topic. But let's set that aside.
Mm-hmm.
The key is that I'm going to guess more than half of his food doesn't get put up or eaten, and he ends up just composting it. That's a guess. Is that
I try to not let that happen. But there are times, there's a couple apple trees. When I don't thin, he doesn't have time for everything, right? So if I don't get on top of things, I didn't thin a couple trees this year and they didn't fruit so great.
All right. Granted, as I said, there's a lot to talk about what he's doing exactly. We can go and examine but instead of that, what I'm trying to get to is I'm going to guess half of all the food that he grows ends up not in somebody's belly.
I think that that's true. There's one tiny thing I want to tell you, though, that I think is so interesting. He throws that food, that anything that's not perfect, over the fence. And he started feeding and befriending a deer. And she has now had fawns, and now that she has grand fawns, and he feeds that deer family. Well, deer are a territorial animal, and she will not allow any other deer that aren't her family to come into his area. So instead of where a lot of folks have deer pressure and they can have a whole herds of deer try to come through and jump their fence and eat their corn, he doesn't. He has one deer and her kin that he feeds copious amounts of food to that he's going to throw away anyway, and she protects him from the rest of the community of deer. And I think that's really interesting. It's not intentional. It's just something that happened.
So, again, I do think there is, a lot of very interesting stuff to talk about with this guy and what all he's doing and stuff like that. But I kind of am trying to get somewhere here.
I apologize.
All right. So I'm trying to say that about half of the food that he grows does not end up in somebody's belly. And I got a chance to visit with him quite a bit. And he kind of told some similar stories for this whole Portland excursion. And I think I stopped by your place on the way back from Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And So it's on that same trip, and I kind of got all this poison pear stuff fresh in my mind. So half of his food is getting in people's bellies. And again, he didn't say anything directly, but I kind of got this feeling like he's kind of bummed about this, that he's got all this food, and he tries to give it to people, and they don't want it. But they'll go buy the same fucking thing from Safeway, you know, or they'll go to a restaurant and eat the same thing at a restaurant. And it's kind of like, and for him, it's, I feel like it's sad. It's a drag, you know. And on top of that, when you're not there, cause you are a neighbor to him and you come by, I don't know, I'm going to guess twice a week.
When I can, yeah.
Okay. What I'm trying to get to is to say he's doing it all by himself, with the exception of this neighbor gal that comes by once in a while,
right,
to kind of, you know, help out and including helping with taking some of the harvest.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah, he is. He's alone.
I mean, he's got the acres. I wish for him to someday consider a gardening gardeners program.
Wouldn't that be fun?
In large part because he does do he has a style of gardening that is really different from my own. On the other hand, I think a lot of, he has such meticulous care in everything that he does that I think that a lot of people would groove on being around him and becoming like him.
Yeah.
And of course, actually gardening with him elbow to elbow, harvesting with him elbow to elbow, eating with him elbow to elbow, or eating the harvest with him elbow to elbow.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, I kind of feel like I'm really feeling like I got to get this gardening gardener's book done. And in order to get the book done, I have to have the first iteration working well. And I believe like the first iteration is the permaculture boot camp. And so, all right. So that was my next story. And granted, you're right. There's stories and stories and stories and stories about what he's doing that is definitely worth exploring. And I'm kind of feeling like, okay, good.
another time.
Yeah. And so, I do want to say though that I have never seen his onions as big as what this guy is growing. Those are the biggest onions I've ever seen in my life. Oh, there's so much to talk about. I do want to, all right. I kind of feel like, first of all, to solve global problems, I think that the number one most powerful solution for all global problems is to be able to get 20 people to live under one roof without stabbing each other. And so at the same time, like, we've changed the way that we allow people to live in our community, and we won't allow anybody to live in our community unless they have been in the boot camp for 6 months. And we do make one exception, and that's if you have enough skip BBs.
Uh-huh.
And I don't remember how many we've declared, but I've kind of been just saying, like, you got to just be in the boot camp for 6 months. And I kind of feel like that's the simple answer. Be in the boot camp for 6 months. Then you can either rent an acre with the Ant Village program, or you can, do buy, which is, you know, our flavor of buy is lifetime rent, the Deep Roots program, for an acre. And so that's where we're at now. But I really kind of think that the core of everything is the boot camp. Now, I have stated several times that if somebody would be taking on a leadership role in the boot camp for 4 years, I would give them Allerton Abbey. Or if they're in a leadership role here for 4 years, then they could build a new Allerton Abbey, you know, and then basically get that at the end of the 4 years, you know, using the boot camp to build it.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
So, and I kind of feel like that's part of the Garden and Gardeners program. So, so if this guy were to have a Garden and Gardeners program, he's got many acres. He could set aside an acre and say, okay, as part of the Garden and Gardeners program, we're going to do a whole lot of gardening to grow enough food to feed, you know, more people than we have. And then at the same time, we're going to work on building a new home on that acre over there. We're going to put a fence around it, beautiful gardens. And then someday this will, you know, be the home of somebody that has been in the leadership role here for 4 years. And then once they have that, they can continue in the Garden and Gardeners program at halftime if they want, or they can just do zero Garden and Gardeners program and do their own thing on that acre.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're part of the Garden and Gardeners program halftime, they get all the benefits that come with that, even though they're – so anyway, yeah, they've got their own place. They don't need a bunk anymore. But if they want to continue eating with everybody and doing everything with everybody, then they can. So they could choose how they want to go. Anyway, I feel like that will be – when the Garden and Gardeners program book is written – that will be part of the general recipe. So, I think the Garden and Gardeners program benefits from having people in it that have been there for more than a year. But the great thing is that a lot of people are ramping up, and that the solution, the thing is not only do people want to come for it to be a soul building experience, but there's a lot of people that are working some job and they're living hand to mouth. They're barely getting by. And part of what they're saying is like, I want to go and have a homestead, but there's no way I'll ever afford it. And it's kind of like, all right, so this is a program where you can go and do your homesteading now.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, in time, you could switch over to basically being retired. You know, which is kind of what's being suggested. 4 years in a Garden and Gardeners program and then retire.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. I kind of feel like that's kind of where I'm going, is like the solution to nearly everything, every problem that I saw just felt like the Garden and Gardeners program.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but it wasn't something I could say in like a minute. But it did seem like it's a solution for everybody, you know, all these. And so I kind of feel like when the book eventually comes out 5 years from now, maybe, then, I kind of feel like, maybe it'll transform how people live in the United States, maybe the world.
Yeah.
And that's okay. So all this time, this is what I've been trying to get to, is that how this will help, like, more than feed, it will feed people a much healthier food program. And in fact, I kind of wonder if people who are ill will someday seek out a Garden and Gardeners program.
Yeah.
Strictly for the health benefits.
Right.
And so it might cure a lot of, I mean, I know that there have been, like, I don't know, I would imagine that 20%, 25% of the people that come here arrive with some sort of health problem, which goes away in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And so I kind of feel like this is a very powerful solution. So, Samantha, we got, I don't know if there's anything more on my list. Like, the one last note I have on here, I visited a lot of properties, and I want to express how valuable a boneyard is.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
And I went to two different properties, one that didn't have a boneyard, and there was a lot of stuff that they should move to a boneyard, and another property that was absolutely picture perfect, and they were telling me about, and they call it something under the boneyard. I think they call it Resource Avenue.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I have a stash pile for all your materials.
And they basically, like, anything that is less than handsome and isn't going to be used this week goes up there.
Yeah.
And so the result is that the property was very handsome, very inviting, very beautiful. And so, yeah, what a treat. And there's a bunch of other stuff to talk about what they're doing as well. But, all right. Samantha, anything more about this poisoned pear idea? It was so, I felt like I saw a lot of sadness. And I kind of feel like this is also a flavor of sadness that current gardeners may not be aware about because their pear hasn't started to produce pears yet.
They aren't set up for that yet. Well, I think that I would just say that I hope that folks don't get discouraged. You know, I mean, if you're so successful at what you do that you have too much food, you can't eat it all, I think that's great. You know, nothing's really going to waste. You know, if nothing else, the worms will be delighted and your soil will be richer next year. There are things that you do have to pick up. I mean, you have to get those apples. You have to either have somebody eat the apples. Maybe you get pigs. Maybe you get animals to do the work for you if you don't have people. Because there's, you know, I mean, I'm working on a couple of the trees right now that haven't been picked up for so many years, and they've got the bugs in them. So yeah. I have a beautiful, I don't know how old this apple tree is. I mean, it's such a big tree covered in absolutely magnificent apples, but every single one is full of bugs. So I'm working on healing that using my sheep to eat them all because I don't want to eat them because they're buggy. But I think that giving the nutrient to the tree and cleaning up every single apple, I think the apple tree will be healthier next year and hopefully we'll be able to get over that. But I think that, you know, just to not be discouraged, you know, if you're doing it enough that you're actually growing food, feeding yourself all the pears you can eat, that's a real success. And so many people would love to just get a pear. So, you know, and I think it might be hard if the people around you would rather eat out of Safeway than eat out of the garden. But not to let that take the value that you see in it. I mean, it's valuable to you, which is why you're doing it. So, you know, you get to be the winner and you don't have to convince anybody else. You have the win yourself that you did it. And it comes around every year. We get to do it again. And whatever mistakes we made, we get to learn from them over winter, make a note to do something different. And, you know, in the spring, we start it up again. It's one of the most wonderful things about gardening and playing outside is that it comes around again. Got another chance.
I think that when you sit at a table with 8 other gardeners, 3 meals a day.
Oh, gosh, it'd be so wonderful.
And then you talk about, you know, how do we want to then, you know, there's so much give a shit and care and that. And then it all gets taken care of. Like, it's like, you know, the idea of like, oh, no, some of the apples dropped and some of the apples are gross. I mean, I know that 3 times this year I've seen people make applesauce where they're, you know, some of the apples that they got are not the best. And it's like, oh, should we, you know, chuck this one? And it's like, no. So we, you know, cut off the gross stuff and the rest of it is going into the applesauce.
Yeah.
And it's like, which is great. The rest of the apple is great. And, but like, you know, some of them, and then it's like, okay, for the gross stuff, let's make sure that we dump that far away from any apple tree. You know, wherever we're putting that, that's going to be turned into great soil eventually as it breaks down and whatnot. Because we do the root scout composting technique here.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, apples do not do well with their own apple junk underneath them. Yeah. All the apples turn gross. So, but the thing is the table to be able to be gardening with other gardeners. You know, and to be able to talk about the crops and to talk about the soil and talk about, you know, how to go about all of this. And there's not only that, but if some people are using their evenings and weekends to manage a completely different acre from everybody else, there can be many schools of thought under the permaculture umbrella. So there can be other, because sometimes people are like, you know, they have different ways they want to do it. And it's like, alrighty then, we can sort that out. And so there can be different ways of doing it.
Well, that speeds us up. I mean, instead of having to try again each year, if we all do something different in 1 year and we talk about it, we learn from so many more people and different techniques every year. It goes so much faster to create your own personal optimized system. If we're living together, maybe we can have chickens. Maybe we can have animals to run the waste through so we're not wasting it. We're turning it into eggs or bacon. You know, the animals love to eat your leftovers.
You know, one other thing I thought about for the poison pear was if this individual, for some of the things that I observed, if there was a lot of, and I know I'm kind of a broken record on this the last 6 months, if there was a lot of sunchokes, walking onions, and kale, if there was a lot of that, then there's two important things that happen. Then the pears that are falling on the ground, it's like, oh, well, as opposed to like this deep sadness, this darkness that comes with like, I'm wasting food and I'm wasting delicious pears. Then, because the other thing is that I saw a lot of is that, and sometimes it's with pears, not pears as often, but sometimes some varieties of apples, it's like, not yet.
Yes.
Not yet. Too late. And so it's like, damn, you know, I missed the window. Whereas with these three crops I just mentioned, so like sunchokes have like a 9-month harvest and walking onions have a 12-month harvest and kale has a 10-month harvest. So it's kind of like they'll pump out food so much that even in the middle of winter in Montana, you can pop outside and get some.
Yeah.
And so there's it's less stressful. You can, when you're talking about feeding your family or feeding multiple families, then it's like there's more bounty here. Yeah. And so then the whole thing with the pears is like the harvest window is too small. I mean, here I am getting ready to go on this trip to Europe, which is what this one guy was saying. I'm going on this trip to Europe and I got a pack today.
Yeah.
And all the pears are ready today. And half of them are already on the ground. And it's like, but I can't do it today. And by the time I get back, they'll all be on the ground.
Right. Whereas, well, that's how it is with a lot of sugars. You know, if you don't pick your sugary things, your grapes or whatever at the right time, you missed it. But if you have a lot of it, you'll probably hit something.
Whereas with the sunchokes, it's like if you never get around to harvesting it, then next year there'll be five times more.
Yeah.
And then if you don't harvest that, the year after that will be five times more than that. It'll just keep expanding and getting wider and deeper and more.
Yeah.
And just, you know, so it's like no problem. No problem. We will eventually get to the point that we will feed an army.
That's wonderful. Any plant that you can store in the ground, store in a living state, because then when you do go harvest it, it's as fresh as it could be. You don't need to pull that onion until you're going to make dinner.
Yeah.
That's fresh food. The kale, you're not going to pick it until you're actually going to eat it.
And then if you don't, it'll put out seeds and make new kale plants.
Make new kale. Yeah.
And so every time you go out there, there's like 100 kale plants and you have as much as you want. And then there's going to be this 2-month window where the kale plants are so pathetic that there's really not much to harvest from them. And it's like, well, that's the two, you know, you get to harvest kale for 10 months out of the year. And so now you're here for that 2 months, but there's still all the walking onions for 5 days a year.
Yep.
You know, as much as you want. And so, but I just kind of think from the poison pear perspective, it takes a lot of the sadness and sting out of the poison pear to be growing this stuff that can be harvested through the winter and with such a large harvest window.
Yeah.
And to say, like, this year I just missed the harvest window. Damn. And I think that it kind of takes some of the poison out of it, you know, some of that darkness out of it. All right. Samantha, anything else to add to this podcast?
It's wonderful. Thank you so much.
If you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com, where we talk about gardening, gardeners, homesteading, and permaculture all the time.
All the time.
Put Paul's brain on your plot. Do you have a hunk of land but don't know where to start? Do you have a world-changing permaculture idea and you need some feedback? Do you feel like the guy in overalls may inexplicably hold the keys to all your wildest permaculture and homesteading dreams? Well, you're probably wrong. But if you want to give it a go anyway, you can hire Paul for a consultation. He will be all yours for a whole entire hour. Schedule your Paulversation today at permies.com/consult. permies.com/consult.